What we want to get into a little bit today is the very principle of experience. There's a statement that says this: an hour's worth of discussion with a wise man is worth a month's study in books. You think that's a true statement? Would you rather talk with somebody who really knows, has been through an experience, and can explain things to you, or read some book? Now, you can get a lot by reading books, but sometimes when you can sit down and actually ask questions and have interplay, you can get a grasp of the experience that the person has. The person can tune in to what you need to learn, tell you what you need to know. It's a little bit like learning a new computer program. Have you ever tried to learn it just by studying the manual? You can do it, but it takes a lot of work, doesn't it? But if you got somebody there that knows the program, often you can learn in 5 minutes if you just have somebody, well, you do this. To do this, you do ABC. Wow, I read the whole manual and didn't get that. And so a little bit of experience goes a long way. Now, this is one of the problems we have as human beings, is we have to learn by experience, or oftentimes what happens? We don't learn at all. Like, I remember my mom told me not to touch the stove when it is red. You know, the top of the stove, the burner. Actually, I paid a little bit of attention to that. I was watching it one day. I remember when I was about 5 years old, I was watching it, and it was red, and all of a sudden it wasn't red anymore. I thought, oh, now I can touch it. But little did I know, it was still pretty darn hot. I touched it, and burned my finger. So by experience, I incorporated that into my system. I understood what red probably meant even worse than what I got. And by the experience, I never touched a hot stove like that again, in that manner anyway. When you're training a kid, for instance, you'll tell them not to do something, and they'll go ahead and do it. They live through the experience, they regret it. Then after they've suffered a little pain, then they finally learn. And the parent says, well, I've taught you this all along. How come you just didn't listen to me? If you just would have listened to me, you could have saved yourself all of this pain. So experience is a great teacher. They say that's one of the reasons we had to come down to this mortal sphere, is to experience good and evil, joy and pain, joy and sorrow, and so on, by experiencing the dualities, by really going through them. It's a lot different than maybe sitting back in some static state and talking about the theory of dualities. Here we're experiencing the dualities. And by going through the experience, it's produces an enrichment. It is said that when the soul gathers back to its source, he gathers back the fruit of experience. Think of that statement, the fruit of experience. In other words, experience produces a fruit that we take with us to the eternal worlds, and it produces a livingness and a joy and an enrichment that we will have in our possession always. It's a fruit, so to speak, that we take with us that we can then partake of and relive if we want to and enjoy it again and again. This is why it's so important to live our lives so the end of our experience is good, is joyous. If the end of our experience is a negative situation, then the fruit that we have will take with us won't be good fruit, and our memories are a reflection on the incident. If, for instance, the end of your experience, you wound up hurting a lot of people, and then you reflect upon it from a higher state, it won't be something very usable for enhancing your livingness, would it be? Now, people often ask, and this is often the question that is called the ultimate question, is why we are here, or why God made anything to begin with. You look up at the stars at night. Every time I look up at the stars, I'm just full of wonderment. And I asked myself, you know, the greatest miracle is that anything is here at all. I mean, that's a miracle. I mean, talk about not being able to see the forest for the trees. We're looking for miracles, but the greatest miracle of all is that we are just, that anything is here, that even a rock is somewhere. Even a planet, bare bones planet is somewhere, but the fact that a universe is here teeming with life and we can see it out there, it's a tremendous miracle, and it's a tremendous miracle that we're here to begin with. So what's it all about? Why are we even here? Do you think it has something to do with experience? Now, we've all heard the statement that God is one. Now, let's go back to the beginning when God was one. He was in a static condition, just a condition of being. Now, visualize you being the one life, and you're only one. And nothing is really happening except maybe in your universal mind you imagine some things happening. But that's not really good enough, is it? You imagine, you daydream about stuff. But then God reaches a point where he thinks, you know, I'm really getting bored with just imagining what creation would be like. I'm going to make a creation that's really real. And then I'm going to jump into it myself. I'm going to reflect myself and create divine reflections and extensions of myself all over this universe, and I'm going to jump in there with my being and my life, and I'm going to experience in reality, in a state of duality, where I'm actually going to go through it, not just imagine it, but I'm going to go through it and then work my way out of it. You know, it's going to be tough. If I create a universe and I jump into it, it's a little bit unpredictable, everything that's going to happen. The one thing that I do have faith in myself in is that I can jump into this universe and work my way back out of it. I have faith that I can do that, or I wouldn't have do it to begin with. So God, in other words, saw the end from the beginning. But between the end and the beginning, he doesn't know everything that's going to happen. If he did, it wouldn't be that interesting. He wouldn't even do it to begin with. If he knew everything that was going to happen, he wouldn't even do it. If you were playing Monopoly with another person, and you knew every move in advance that everybody was going to make, and your opponent makes a move, and you have to make a predetermined move that you already knew you were going to make, and you make it, would the game even be any fun? The game is only fun because you don't know what's going to happen. So why does everybody say that God knows every little thing that's going to happen? He knew a million years ago I was going to snap my fingers right now. Imagine how boring it would be for God if he knew everything that's going to happen. What the scriptures does say, he knows the end from the beginning. It doesn't say he knows everything in between. Suppose that you're a God, and you're progressing from one level to another. Now you've already perfected a creation on a lower level, and now you're doing it on a higher level. Is all you want to do is do the exactly same thing over again? Or would you want to add maybe a little extra complexities in there? It's like when these kids play video games. They master the first level, then they go on the second level. The second level actually corresponds to the first level, but then as they're playing the second level, some extra bad guys are thrown in or something like that, and it's harder. They go, oh, this is harder, and it takes a while longer, but they like that. They don't want the first level repeated. Then they go to the second level, the third level, fourth level, and each level of these video games that they go on, it gets tougher. And they don't want to go through the third level, the fourth level, repeated over and over. They like the idea that unexpected twists are added in the next level. It's speeded up. Things get more difficult. It gets harder and harder and harder, and they like it. And if it didn't get harder and harder and harder, what would happen to the video game industry? Yeah, the kids would quit playing. They like the idea it gets harder and harder and harder. You and I are created in the image of God, and when we study ourselves, it tells us about the mind of God. So if we like different levels, what do you think God likes? You think he wants different levels too? Yeah. They get a basic plot behind a video game, Star Wars or whatever they're making the video game around. And they have basic elements included in there. Then they take these basic elements, they start making the game simple so even somebody like James over here can play it. Actually, if I want something complicated explained, I go to James. So they want something simple. It starts out simple and it gets more complex. And this is the way the progression works in our system. Now, God himself is like us. We are like God, and God is like us. God likes these different levels. And the different levels of God's video game is found in his creations. If we could go below the threshold of the atom and find out everything that's working down there, we'll find it goes from the complex to the simple. God started creation on a first level, so to speak. First level of difficulty. And then he introduced a second level. And the level that we're up to now is level 7. Because everything is composed of 7 rays. 7 colors in the rainbow. 7 musical notes on the musical scale. The whole universe is structured from the atom to man on the principle of the number 7. We are on level 7. And we're going to stay there till the end of this universe. It won't be until an entirely new universal creation is created that the number 8 will go to level 8. But that will be so far ahead that it boggles the mind to think about it. Now what God did is he created this universe on the principle of illusion, and then he jumped into it, and when he jumped into it, because we're reflections, we're made in his image, so to speak, we jump in with him. And so here we all are in this universe. And we got to figure out what to do with it. This is what a lot of people don't realize, is they think that every step is planned 100% of the way. What is planned is what is seen by the higher lives is a vision of how the end should be. But how to get there is we don't know. And life is a little bit like a game of Monopoly. Think of a game that you really like, and Monopoly will often come up if you played it. And why is Monopoly fun? Why do we like to play that game? Why does it never go out of style?
Because you get to get rich.
Own property. Right? And what else? What else is in it?
There's an element of chance. Hotels.
Yeah. But you like to play Monopoly, even though you may land on somebody else's motel, right? Well, why do you want to play that? You could land on somebody else's motel and lose everything.
They could land on yours, and you could gain all their stuff.
Well, that's right. But you could lose. Why play if you could lose?
Opportunity.
Why do you want to play something you could lose at?
Adventure. For the adrenaline.
Have you ever played another game where, like, everybody kind of wins? Do you even remember the name of that game? No, you don't even remember. You don't even want to play such a game, do you? We love Monopoly because the hazards in Monopoly are probably greater than any game you can think of. When you can land on somebody's motels and lose everything. And when have you ever done it? And then you get a really sinking feeling, you know, and it's kind of irritating. And you almost swear, I'm never going to play this game again. But then you come back and you play it again. Yeah. This is what God decided to do. He's sitting up there, no universe or anything, kind of bored. Well, I got to do something kind of more interesting in my next creation. What am I going to do? I know, I'll create a universe where there's all kinds of pitfalls that's going to make Monopoly look like a piece of cake. You know, and I'm going to make it really hard for myself this time. And I'm going to jump in this universe, and it's going to take everything I've got to be able to figure out how to get from A to B. Okay, it's going to take every piece of ingenuity me and my co-reflections have to figure out how to get out of this mess I'm going to create. And that's going to be interesting. It's a lot better than just floating around here in the void with nothing to do. So he creates the whole universe. He jumps in it, loses his memory, doesn't know why he's there. He just knows he's got to get out of it. And so he starts from scratch. And who are his fingers and toes and eyes and ears?
shows.
Yeah, it's Tom and Jenny and Shelley and even Asaf. Got to pick on Asaf. He's fun to pick on. But we are all the appendages to God. Even says that in 1 Corinthians chapter 16, I believe, it or 12. It talks about that Christ is the head of the church, and other people are the arms and the eyes and the legs and so on, the various parts of the body, that the whole body is actually Christ. Jesus was the head, but the rest of us in the body of Christ also belong there. We're also part of it, making us also bear the responsibility of Christ. So the whole universe has God plunging into it, and now after he's plunged into it, he's got to figure out what to do with it. And that's what makes it exciting. Now, a lot of people say, well, I want there to be a great plan so every step of the way is known. That makes me feel more comfortable. Well, if you play Monopoly and you know every roll of that dice that's going to be made, are you going to enjoy the game? Even if you win, if you know every roll of the dice you're going to make in the next 100 rolls, you know the next one's going to be 2, next one's going to be 7, next one a 9. Is it going to be fun to play anymore? No, it won't be any fun, will it? So God limited us. He made us limited so we can have maximum challenge. So God jumps in this universe not really knowing how he's going to get out. He just has faith in himself that his intelligence will work his way out. And it's going to be an interesting ride. It's going to be tough. It's going to be a lot tougher than the game of Monopoly and a lot longer. And he's going to need the assistance of every one of us to get him out. But he's here. He's lost his memory. He's in us. We've lost. We do not understand why we're here completely. We just know we have to move forward and make the situation better. We all know that inside of us. And that's the original purpose of God manifesting in us. Is we instinctively know that we have to move forward and make things better. We all know that, don't we? And what do? We eventually will do that. A lot of us lose faith because some of us have bad accidents or diseases or a lot of things go wrong and we have wars and famine in different places and we look at all these bad things and we think, boy, the world's going to hell in a handbasket. It's never going to get better. But we go back to this faith in the intelligence of God manifesting through all the life in the universe is always working to make things better and always does. Life is a lot like the game of Monopoly. You know, we grumble at Monopoly when we land on somebody else's motel. It makes us very angry and upset. And we say, why did I ever play this game? But then after it's over, what do? Okay, let's play another. I lost this one, but I want to play another one now so I can beat you this time. So I can get the motels and you can land on them. But who wants to play a game where you know what every move is going to be? Where everything is always safe, where there's no fines, there's no motels to land on, there's no risk. Nobody plays a game like that. No game like that sells. All the games that sell are games with high risk and high reward. And we're in a situation now, we've created this game of life, and we are participants in creating this world. And many of us ask, well, why is there suffering? I mean, why could we have a car accident and ruin our lives, or bad marriage, or why does God allow all this stuff? Well, it's not God that allowed us, we're participants in it. And we put together this game just like we voluntarily buy the game of Monopoly, yet it's one of the most risky games you could buy, yet it's one of the best sellers since I can remember. People just love this game because of the high risk. And we love the game of life even though we complain about it when we're losing. When we're winning, we're on top of the world and we think, well, life is good. Life is worth it. In the end, of course, we all master it and we all wind up winning. But when we all wind up winning, then we get bored, then we get together and say, well, let's create another game, but let's make it tougher next time. You know, this earth life wasn't tough enough. You know, we mastered it a little bit too easy, so we'll make it really hard next time. Meanwhile, this is hard enough for me right now. So I found this with everybody I've come to know well, that just about everybody has everything that they can handle, and they don't really want any more. Almost all of us have all the difficulties that we could ask for, and so we have plenty to keep us busy and occupied. But when those difficulties are overcome, then it's kind of a thrill. The life of God through us and through His universe is to always be doing new things. This universe that we're in now, there's never been a universe like it in the history of eternity. This is a universe unlike any universe that has ever existed, and there's probably been billions of them in existence in the past. But this is totally different. Why is it different? It's new because the life of God wants new challenges. That's what gives us joy, is mastering, having challenges, and mastering. So visualize God when He created this universe, and He thought, well, the last universe I mastered, it was tough, but it was kind of fun in the end. I didn't think I was going to get out of that one because it was a really tough one. But now I've mastered it. I can't do the same thing over again. I'm going to create a more complex one. And this is even going to be harder to create mastery in, and to master it to the extent that I can let it go and then create a new creation all over again. So each time God creates a new universe, He does it with additional complications to make it interesting. Now, when we play a game, do we want to play a game where we win every time? Monopoly is really a great game because it has tremendous pitfalls. You can lose everything in one move, and then another move you can gain everything. And it's really a good example of how life works. Life is like that. And so God has created this universe, and you are a part of the creation. Your job is to come down and enliven the spark of God within you and master everything within your sphere. And what you are doing is different than any other being in the entire universe. You're unique. Your problems are unique to you. Even though Dan has had some of the same problems you've had, your problems are unique. And as each one of us look over our lives, we can all see that. Nobody's lived a life exactly like I have lived, thank God. And nobody has lived life exactly the way Susan has lived. And we all have our complications, and it's our job to solve them. And solving them is what makes life interesting. We don't want to play a game unless there's attention. It's like the greatest game the Boise State Broncos played was the Fiesta Bowl. How many saw the Fiesta Bowl? Oh, you saw it, Larry? That's a pretty good game. I mean, there we were trouncing Oklahoma. Everybody, we were the underdog. We'd never played a team of this stature before. And there we were on national TV, and we were ahead by several touchdowns. And then we had a fluke happen, and we lost some points. And then at the end, with, 20 seconds left, they scored a touchdown and got ahead. Well, with 20 seconds left, we scored a touchdown again, and then we went to the playoffs. We were tied up, went to the playoffs, and they scored the first overtime point. And so we decided to go for the three-pointer, and by a hook and lateral play and a very inventive play, we pulled it off. We took a tremendous risk and pulled it off, and I'll tell you, Boise has never been so thrilled. I mean, the whole city was celebrating. I mean, you should have lived there, you guys. I mean, those guys come home, they were like the biggest heroes you'd ever seen. I mean, we beat Oklahoma. We not only beat them, but we beat them in the last 20 seconds. You know, that's what made it. But that point of tension caused everybody, I tell you, everybody in Boise felt good about themselves for a month or two after that game. I mean, it didn't matter what was going on in their life. You meet somebody in a grocery store, oh, did you see that game, you know.
Go
I mean, everybody was excited. Even people who didn't like football was excited. But
It was a great game because it was tough. It was really hard. Like John Kennedy says, we're going to the moon, not because it's easy, but because it is hard. You don't hear politicians make that statement anymore. Well, we're going to do this, not because it's easy, but because it's hard. If Bush were to say that now, people would look at him. Yeah, that Bush is as stupid as I thought he was. But Kennedy said it. He said it in the right way that really got to us. We're going to the moon, not because it's easy, but because it's hard. And when we lit on the moon, we were celebrating. You know, it was like Boise winning that Fiesta Bowl. It was a great, great feeling. The solar plexus is not logical. The solar plexus takes everything and turns it upside down. It can take reasoning. You can say black is black, and the solar plexus interprets that black as white. And so it reverses everything. And the reason it reverses everything is the purpose of the solar plexus in the astral world is to lead us into experience. If you think about it, you will not go into experience. I remember the first time I dived off a diving board, it was the scariest thing I'd ever done. And I kept thinking about it. Well, what if, and my mind about drove me crazy. I finally just had to shut off my mind and dive, you know, because my mind was creating fears in me. And I'm a terrible swimmer to begin with, so that made it even worse. So just diving off that diving board was probably one of the most terrifying things I've ever done. But anyway, the point is, if you stop and think about something, it can bring tremendous fears to your mind. And if we didn't have the emotional body to pull us into experience, we would just play it safe because we would think, man, if I go in this experience, I could have a big problem. If I married this person, there's a million things that could go wrong. I mean, look at him. He doesn't shave very good, or he doesn't clean his fingernails, or whatever. You know, he smells. whatever.
Quit telling my life. Yeah.
I should not marry him. But on the emotional level, when the emotions come in play and we're polarized with emotions, we just go into experience. We go where angels fear to tread. It doesn't really matter what the danger is if we feel that we're going to get a high from it, if we're going to get 15 minutes of fame, 15 minutes of gratification, we plunge into it fearlessly.
Especially
we're not afraid. What say?
Especially when you're young.
Yeah, especially when you're young. When you get older, the mind kind of starts to take over a little bit because you've had so many learning experiences and painful experiences. When you get older, you do tend to shift up to the mind a little bit, think, well. So anyway, the important point to remember is that's a really interesting principle, the law of correspondences and how much we can learn from it. And just by looking at the night sky even, the correspondence there is fantastic. When we go to the highest realm, we originated there when our basic individuality began to vibrate, and light is produced by vibration. And points of light began to appear in the divine space. And it explains why we're all one. Because space is one, so the livingness of God reverberates through all divine space. And because you are a point in divine space and connected to divine space, you are connected to every other being that's existing within the divine space. Not only every other being, but every point of matter, every atom, every molecule that's in existence in divine space is connected to you. Connected to you by the space and by the vibration that reverberates through the divine space. So it's interesting to contemplate. So in the beginning, your intelligence began to manifest and then began to descend. We made the decision to manifest, and that created a point of light of which we were a part. Now, then we descended through the formless worlds. How that descent happened has never been explained by any teacher that I've ever seen, but especially descending through the formless worlds. But it began with just an increase of light, and then the ideas began to manifest as we enter into the Atmic. This is the world of the ideas. And the ideas as to what you wanted to do when you came down and descended and came back up. And so the ideas began to formulate in your intelligence as to how you wanted to manifest, how you were going to be different than anyone else, how you were going, the lessons that you were going to learn, and how you were going to give God an experience that no one else has given him. Because have you ever thought about why God manifests to begin with? God manifests to begin with because he wants experience. He is a life form. And every life form craves experience. And they don't crave safety. And the explanation I always give is like the game of Monopoly. In the fact that we're attracted to games like Monopoly, football, things that are somewhat, the more dangerous it is, the more we're attracted to it. I love football, but it's a very dangerous sport. But the danger is part of the what really makes it interesting. And the fact that you can lose everything in Monopoly or gain everything makes Monopoly a game that just won't go away. It's created, what, over 100 years ago, and it's still popular because of all the potential disasters in that game attracts us. Now, when God saw that he could manifest within the universe and multiply himself through all these billions of monads which developed in us, he saw that he was creating a game that had many levels and would be very difficult. It's like creating a computer game, except the game has 7 levels in it. And with a regular computer game, you can play 1 level or go 2 levels up and then think, well, I got so good, I'm going to quit. But when God entered the universe, there was no quitting, no quitting allowed. He has to go through all the levels and come back up, or else he's stuck. You know. So he has to descend and ascend, or the game is lost. So it's risky for him. And there's lots of perils. So we're told, Joseph Smith made the interesting statement that when God created the universe, he did it with fear and trembling. And D.K. also makes a statement that fear itself has its origins in the warp and woof of the universe, the fabric of the universe itself. I thought, warp and woof of the fabric of the universe. Interesting statement. Anybody know what warp and woof is?
Doesn't have to do with type of weaving threads the way they go.
Yeah, in weaving threads. One way is the warp and the other way is the woof. You know. So when something is weaved, it's weaved with the warp and the woof. So he says the warp and the woof of the universe itself is the origin of fear. Now, how did the warp and the woof of the universe have the vibration of fear woven into it? The reason it did was because when God decided to create this universe, he was afraid. Wouldn't you be afraid too if you had to jump into a universe and wasn't sure how long it would take you to get back out and to solve all the equations? You had to go in there and you had to rely on your little creations. You had to rely on Joseph over there, Darlene, Susan. He's having to rely on us ne'er-do-wells to get him out of this situation.
Begs the question, does everyone have to get there, or just can one beat the game and get us all there?
Yeah, all of it. All of us.
Actually, I don't want to be finishing it too soon.
I want to know where the cheat codes are for the.
That's why you're here.
Being stuck in World of Warcraft and not be able to get out.
So he's you visualize yourself as God, because in the beginning we were all there with him. In the mind of God, in the beginning, we were all there. We were all one life, and we were part of the whole thing. So visualize us one as God is. God, we are all one in a way that is hard to fathom. Because in the beginning, before there was any points of light, we were all interwoven in the warp and woof of space itself, before we manifest as points of light or monads. So we were all there in the mind of God, and we shared that fear. So visualize yourself there with God in the beginning, bored as the dickens because there's nothing to do. Okay, I got to create something exciting. I've created a lot of universes in the past, and some of them I barely got out of with the skin of my teeth. But I'm going to really create a difficult one this time. I'm going to create one that's going to be take everything I've got to solve all the problems that's going to manifest. It's going to be fun. It's going to be exciting. But what if I get trapped? And what if there's things that I haven't even planned on? What if things surface to... What if it's harder than I thought? Because I'm creating some new things in this. New obstacles. You know, think of a guy creating one of these computer games. He thinks, well, I've got to create this villain here, and I've got to create this problem over here, and then I can't have it too easy on the good guys here. The good guys, you know, they'll be going along, and they'll think that everything's cool, and all of a sudden there's going to be a big tragedy here. So he's the guy that writes these computer programs, see, he's thinking more about what can go wrong than what will go right. And why? To make the game interesting. And what does Murphy's Law says?
Anything that can go wrong will.
Anything that can go wrong will. And that isn't that what happens in a computer game? Everything that can go wrong does go wrong, and there's really only one way to solve almost every problem that occurs in these games. And they're produced that way to make it interesting.
So you're saying we're all gluttons for punishment, basically, huh?
Yeah.
Well, I can't understand. If he barely got out of other universes by the skin of his teeth, why would he want to make it harder?
Well, that's exactly why.
Well, that's what you do in a computer game. You master one computer game, so now you got it down. So you do all the levels. You got it down. It's easy. Do you continue to play them?
Yes.
Well, not forever, but you say, I want a bigger challenge next time.
I had a profound experience in which basically, I had that sense of being home for a moment. And I remember thinking, like, we're not in such a hurry to get back, actually. God is not in a hurry to get back to himself.
Yeah.
You know, that's what we're all, like, searching for. But when you kind of get there, you go, oh, no, we want to be back here, you know, trying to get back there.
Well, it's like in church, they used to preach, oh, man, it's so great when Jesus shows up, and after church us guys used to gather around. I used to say, boy, I hope Jesus doesn't come soon, because there's a bunch of stuff I want to do. It was like if Jesus showed up, all of a sudden the fun wouldn't be there.
He's going to
ruin the party.
Wouldn't be able to party. We just go sit around and sing hymns or something, you know. So all of us teenagers, we used to say, man, I hope he doesn't come anytime soon.
What else has God got to do if he doesn't do this and he has all of time or whatever to do it, so he has to do something? And if he didn't split himself into parts, who would he have to talk to?
Yeah, right. I mean, if oneness is nice when you're just resting, contemplating. And that's what God does between creations. He contemplates and we all gather in oneness, in the mind of God, contemplating everything that has gone on in the universe past. And we contemplate that game, well, how interesting it was. We think of everything that happened, and then we start thinking of, well, on the new game, what can we do to make it more interesting? And we might have been too clever in that, because we made this life pretty tough, didn't we? So, yeah, Blaine.
Well, According to the law of correspondences, then, like if our body is sort of a microcosm of God's body, then there must be other gods creating space or creating points of light in their space. So maybe they interact with each other and say, hey, my game's better than your game. Check this out.
Yeah, quite possible. Matter of fact, in book 4, the Eternal Words, it talks about the question of, is the universe just all there is, or is there something, another universe beyond it, which is, I won't spoil it for you, I'll let you read that, but it's pretty, one of the more interesting things I've written, I think.
JJ, does that also suggest that in the process of creating a new universe that there is a boundary line of you don't know. Like if we were creating a game, it would be this area where we would create the limits of the game, but we would know, we wouldn't go beyond it because we don't know. So,
well, yeah, I mean, it's probably on something like this. Well, if I create the game and remember all the rules and, you know, all the things I put in, all the obstacles, that would make it too easy. So I'll just make it so I'll forget all this. I'll forget how the game works. And so I'll approach the game as if somebody has created it for me. And that way, I will not understand how the game works. I'll have to learn the game bit by bit to solve all the problems. And that's basically what happened there. So in other words, one of the reasons God created this astral body that turns everything upside down, that makes black appear white and white appear black. And Isaiah complained about this. He says, people take good for evil and evil for good. He says, there's not one that knows what good is. Not one, Isaiah kept complaining. And he tried to teach people what was good for them, and they wanted to do the opposite. They thought the opposite of good. They thought evil was good. Well, it's just like our government. They think overspending is good. Both parties are really big on overspending. That's good. That's good for us to overspend. You know, it's a benefit us all. And so they call something that is not good, good. Government is really famous for that. Everything the government teaches is for our good is usually, we usually shrink back and say, not really. But same thing with the preachers. The preachers, one thing that bugged me when I was in the church was the greatest evil they could think of was taking a peek at Playboy magazine when I was a kid. I mean, that was like the most evil thing that anybody could do, and I thought, you know, it may not be the highest level of reading, but I don't think it's... I don't think it's evil.
He really only
did
it for the articles,
right? Yeah, I read them once in a while for the articles.
Yes. Right.
That fold-out article was really good. But I felt, you know, if you do some backstabbing or say something that's really hurtful to a person, I thought when I was in the church, I thought, in my mind, that's a lot more evil than just looking at a Playboy magazine. You know, so people have really weird ideas of what is good and what is evil. And so the emotional body turns everything upside down. It turns everything upside down so our reasoning doesn't really work right. And this is the way God planned it for us, because this is part of the game. He says, in order to get people involved in this game, he says, now, for me, jumping into this game is tough. God actually thought it through, but, you know, he wanted a new experience. The desire for the new experience was greater than the desire for eternal peace. So he creates this game called the universe. And it was a fearful thing to do. He did it with fear and trembling, thinking of all the things. Because unfortunately for God, in doing this, he had to do some thinking. He just couldn't create the universe on a totally emotional level. It's like when the guy creates the computer game. He has to do it on a very intellectual level. But he doesn't do it with fear, because it's the poor sucker who's playing the game that undergoes the fear. Because he understands the game. But when God created the universe, all of us was going to forget anything about the game or how it worked. So we were all going to have to start from scratch, and he realized this, and it was a very fearful thing to do, to rely on people like you and me that don't know hardly squat about what we're doing, to solve all the equations necessary to get back to the state of beginning.
So it really is a miracle that we're here.
It's a miracle we made it this far.
The Kabbalistic tradition and the tree of life, I mean, I don't understand very deeply, but apparently, like, God had a couple of failed attempts, actually, at creating the universe.
Well, yeah.
The splinters and the points of light all came back because they just couldn't, you know, get far enough. So he actually apparently failed a couple of times.
Well, there's a lot of failures. I mean, well, just look at Mars, for instance. How big a success is that planet? And might have had a little life on it a billion years ago, scientists think, but it was just probably nothing significant. Other metaphysical people say there was life on Mars at one time, so who knows. But look at some of the asteroids. They're definitely barren and never had any life. People think, well, what was their purpose? And look at this planet. There's disease on it. There's all kinds of problems. You can't really find a perfect crystal. You can't really find the perfect flower, the perfect snowflake. Perfection doesn't really exist here, but this planet is evolving toward greater perfection. So things are not created in perfection. Meaning, and if creation is not perfect, that means the creator is not perfect either. It's an illusion that God is perfect. Now, in the end, when the universe reaches its end, there will be what I call relative perfection. That was the word I was looking for. Right. So the best perfection we can ever achieve is what we call relative perfection, because perfection is largely in the mind of the beholder. What's the perfect song? Well, some people think it's one song is the best. Other people think another song is the best. Once you get to something where you have relative perfection, then what you choose as the ultimate is just a matter of taste, really. So God jumped into this game, and he produced the emotional world to entice us. Some people think the devil is the big enticer, but it was God that created the emotional world. And without the emotional world, we would just sit around and not do anything, because we would be afraid to move, afraid to do anything. But this takes away the fear, because there's all kinds of enticements that occur to us. Some people are enticed by alcohol. Some people are enticed by gambling. Some people are enticed by love, a romantic attraction that shouldn't even be, it seems like. But when you go in and out of experience, what do you think when it's over? How many here have had a bad marriage? Raise your hand. Okay. Lorraine.
Yeah.
Would you trade that experience?
Nope. It made me bigger, better, stronger.
You wouldn't say if God come to you and says, I'll just take that experience out of your memory, out of your life, like it never happened. Shall I do that for you?
Would I lose my children?
I guess if he took the experience away. Everything that was connected with that experience is now gone. Would you trade it?
No. No, because there was good stuff in there too.
Yeah. When I think of the toughest things that happened in my life, I wouldn't trade them for anything. But then when I think that, I think that God doesn't mean I want more right now. Give me a little rest, please. It's funny how you think. You think, I wouldn't trade it for anything, but I don't want more. No more, please. Yeah.
That reminds me, there's an old Star Trek episode where Picard is taken by the Q. I love some of those Q episodes.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay. And he's taken back, and all the bad things in his life, or the things that he thought were mistakes, get taken away from him, and he lives
he kind of relives his life without all the mistakes, and he realizes it's really boring, and that it made him, you know, he said it unraveled the fabric of his life by taking those experiences out.
Tapestry.
Or the tapestry, yeah. I thought that was really good.
There's some interesting ones like that, yeah.
Well, since we're pawns in this universal game that God has created, how do you think he thinks we're doing?
Well, you are part of his mind. How did you do?
He doesn't know. He forgot.
He's a pawn in his own game.
He lost the cheat sheet.
Well, yeah, but a pawn can become any, you know, any
pawn or the player.
Ultimately, it can become any piece on the board if it gets.
Now, fortunately, there's all kinds of levels of progression. There are beings that are not the one God, but are great entities that have progressed far beyond us, that are able to, that have gone up to, say, let's say there's seven levels in the game. There are entities that have gone up to maybe the sixth level or so. And we're at level maybe two, let's say. So they can give us clues. If we get stuck, well, the guys that have solved it, they can give us some hints as to what we need to do to solve the equations on our part. Change is often criticized by people because they think, well, we don't want change. We want to go after the ultimate perfection and be saved and live forever with God and Jesus, and we're going to be, or Mohammed or whatever, and we're going to be in a state of bliss forever and ever and ever. But why do you suppose God created the world to begin with? Let's suppose that you were God, and you were up there and floating around, and there were just you. You know. Okay, well, you think, well, this is kind of nice and peaceful, nobody giving me a hard time about anything. But he has one problem, and what's that problem? He just bored to death. So he decides, I'm going to create change. Because change would be interesting. So God decides to create change to eliminate the problem of boredom. Because one of the biggest problems that we have in life is being bored. I remember the biggest problem I had as a teenager was boredom, and got me into quite a bit of trouble, the things I did to cure the boredom problem. But we used to pull pranks and different things like that when I was a kid. But it's interesting how a lot of people think the ideal is to be in some state of bliss where there is no change. But once a goal is reached, do we want to just reach, stay in a plateau? No, you want to maybe rest a while, and the rest is nice, but after you rest and in a state where there's no change, then you get bored, and then you decide you want change. So God decided to create this world, or this universe, and he thought, put yourself in the state of God, because it says that man is created in the image of God. So if we want to understand God, look at how we would do things. Or if we want to understand us, look at how God does things. So God and man are really one. Jesus says, I and my Father are one, and I want you, my disciples, to be one as me and my Father are one. So since we're in the image of God, we should be one with God. If we're one with God, then we can really understand the mind of God. So put ourselves in the situation of being the creator. What do we want to do? We want to create a universe that's fascinating, that's a challenge. When a human being creates a great game, does he want to create one that he can win every time, that's easy? Does he want to create football so everybody always wins? There's never an accident. There's never a problem. There's never a penalty. There's touchdowns all over the place on both sides, and both sides have an equal score. Do we design it that way? No, we designed football so, man, it's a tough game. You have to really be tough to be able to play it, and there's a danger of getting hurt. There's even a danger of getting killed or injured for life. There's all kinds of problems with football, but when it's out there, when you're out there playing, it's fun as the dickens, and when you're watching, it's also fun to watch. People get so excited about it, they almost go crazy over it. And same thing with a game like Monopoly or chess. You play chess and you think you're winning, and then all of a sudden you lose your queen and you thought, oh man. And then you get checkmate. But what do you do after the game's over and you lose and you're just upset and you feel like pounding on the wall? What do? You say, I want to play another game. I used to talk to my mom about reincarnation. She says, no, I don't even want to believe in reincarnation. This life is enough. After this life is over, I've had a hard life. When my life is over, I just want to relax. I say, well, after you've relaxed maybe 100 years, you want another challenge, believe me. And that's true. When you play a game that's hard, you may play a game that's hard. You may have played Monopoly. You may have been on top of the world, and then you lit on the wrong squares and lost all your money. And then you get together with your friends the next week, and what do you want to play? You want to play it again. You want to get revenge. So so you want to play it all over again. And this is the way it is. The type of games we humans design are hard to win games, aren't they? Monopoly is hard to win. Football is hard to win. Chess is really hard to win. The harder it is to win, the sweeter the victory, and the more fun the game is to be played. Yet what are the big complaints that all the atheists have about God? And the reason they say they won't believe in God? I can't believe in God because he would not create a world where there's suffering and all this risk. He wouldn't do that. Well, we do it. If we do it and we're the image of God, why wouldn't God do it? We created football. And man, you watch those guys batter each other in football. And we're talking about American football. European football is pretty tough too. But yeah, that's a tremendous risk in that game. You need to be tough. We design games that are hard, that have pain, and are tough to master, don't we? So why do we complain that God did the same thing for us? He designed a game for us. So this is a tough game we're in, and we're playing it to win. And you know, it's within us. Everybody has an inward recognition about this, because no matter how tough things get for us, there's something in us that keeps telling us to go forward. Every once in a while, somebody just gives up and commits suicide, but even the people that try to commit suicide, once they recover and get in their right mind, they're ready to go again. So it's interesting that people do their best to win. They have that instinct within them to win a game, to win the game of life. It's just an instinct. And most people are pretty optimistic about it. Just like when you're playing a game, a sports game, and you're behind, you won't ever admit that you're going to lose. Even though statistically, you're probably going to lose. You won't admit it. You say, well, I'm going to come back. They interview the losing coach at the halftime, and he says, well, we're going to come back. We're going to make up those points. We're going to beat the dickens out of those other guys. In other words, they have this optimism that keeps the game interesting. They don't give up. They continue on. And in the game of life, we need to play it like a football game or something like this. Because if we do that, if we realize that, yeah, this game of life is set up, it's the most fascinating game of all. It has so many parameters in. And there's so many different avenues to play. If you're playing football or chess or Monopoly or one of our games, there's only so many parameters in it. There's only so many avenues you can take. But in the game of life, it's really unlimited. It's the most fascinating game of all. And there's a number of ways to win. But there's no ultimate win. Once you win, It's a little bit like the video games they have, where they have different levels. You go to level 1, level 2, level 3. Now, when you get good at chess, you just either win or lose. But in the video games, which perhaps kind of reflects the mind of God in some ways, you go from one level to another. And this is the way we do with playing the game of life as long as we're in this universe. Is we win, we master a certain level, and then we go on to a higher level, and we got new things to conquer. New stresses, new joys, new sorrows, new struggles. But in between one level or to another, there's a period of rest. There's always a period of rest because, and that's the principle of the Sabbath. Sabbath principle is basically this. We should take about 1/7 of our time to just kick back and rest. They have it wrong that, you know, you need to just be black and white about the Sabbath. The Sabbath is a principle. And the principle is you need to give yourself enough rest to be reinvigorated. And that's the basic Sabbath principle, is just to give yourself a little bit of rest now and then. If you do nothing but work without kicking back and relaxing a little bit, then it'll be counterproductive after a while. You get too strung out, interferes with your health. But there's an important principle in just kicking back and relaxing. Now, we were talking about the challenges that God makes. He makes this game real hard. Well, once we get down to the physical, it gets really tough. It gets really tough to make change, to make improvements, or to get what you want. This is where the real challenge is. In the higher worlds, it's not so great of a challenge, but it's like we're like diving down 7 miles below the ocean, where it's really dark and it's really hard to navigate, and it takes a lot of energy to get anything done. And so here it's like we're trying to move in honey compared to the higher worlds. But on the other hand, the joy of accomplishment when we do make some mastery over this physical world, when we do make some mastery, the joy of accomplishment is unlike anything in any of the higher worlds because it's so tough. Just like winning a football game against a really good team is just thrilling. That's kind of what life is about, is those moments. They don't come very often, but when they come, you never forget them, even though you may lose for a long time to come. You'll savor that moment that you really won the big one. And this is the way we do with our life. We will have certain moments where we will win in life, and those are worth all the losses. Forget about grumbling that God's mean because he makes us suffer pain. It's the only way. It's the only way to produce a situation where we can have the joy, the greatest possible joy available. Because, you know, who wants to just go float in the void and have nothing happen except be in some type of bliss of some kind, that once you adjust to the bliss, and it's really not bliss anymore. Do you ever notice that? Even after you fall in love with the greatest person you ever met in your life, you know, after a few months, it feels normal. And you have to do something to kind of stimulate that a little bit again. Even if you were like one with God and back there with him again, it would be normal after a while. We have to go beyond normal, explore, and take some risk, put on these suits of armor, descend down 7 levels until we get to the physical, until we get to the hardest possible game that we can imagine. And we as co-creators with God help put everything together so we can blame ourselves as well as God. we came here voluntarily. Why do you think whenever there's a baby born, there's some spirit eager to jump into that body? You know, you think it's because somebody forces him to come? No, he's been maybe out of incarnation for 100 years. He says, man, I want, even though it's difficult, I want to go down. You know, I want some excitement. I want some change. I want a challenge. We all want a challenge. So whenever there's a healthy baby born or even an unhealthy one, there's some entity willing to volunteer to come and enter that body and go through that experience.
When there is creation, the very power of God begins to vibrate, and then all the worlds begin to manifest. And out in these worlds, all the life forms go through all kinds of experiences. And all of us are connected to the God energy. And the purpose of being connected to that God energy is to share the life of God. And God shares his life with us. What does he do it for? He does it because you are all having a unique experience all of your own. Catherine, have you ever felt like no one else in the whole universe has lived the same type of life with the same type of problems that you have? Right. So you are a unique individual. And everyone is here, and that's why there is as many of us as there are, because it takes this many life forms in the universe, however many there are, to have every experience that God could possibly have. And his consciousness is in each one of us sharing that experience. This is the need of every life that there is to have experience. Even when you dream, even when you're asleep, you're having an experience in your dreams. And they've done experiments to try and keep people from dreaming, because when you dream, your eyeballs move around like you're watching a movie screen. Okay? They've done experiments that whenever the guy starts dreaming, they make his eyeballs quit moving. Okay? This stops him from dreaming. Know what happens? He starts going crazy. He starts seeing things while he's awake. Because the soul must experience. If you stop a life form from experiencing, you're interfering with the purpose of God, because he created us to experience through us. Isn't that a beautiful principle? But what do most of the philosophies of the world teach? They teach is, thou shalt not experience. Stand still and remain completely innocent. That is actually anti-God doctrine, because the purpose of even the highest life in the universe, who we call God, is to have experience. What do you think he created everything for? Just watch it? No, he created it because, even as the Bible says, in him we live and move and have our being, therefore he is in us, experiencing with us, no matter what it is. That's a very interesting concept.
Michael Newton, who progressed people between lives, come up with a kind of interesting thing. He asked people that had experience between lives what they did for entertainment there, and he said they didn't really watch any movies or plays or anything like that, because all they had to do was really watch Earth, because we're having every experience that's going on. So all they had to do is turn back and watch people here. And that's more entertaining than any movies that could be put together. So I thought that was kind of sounded right to me. And plus, like I said, I had a personal experience that led me to that belief that oftentimes when we are going through an experience that is equal to anything on a soap opera, there's quite a few people watching us from the other side thinking, well, I wonder how this guy's going to perform in this situation. This is interesting. And we don't want to help him out because that would spoil the fun of the plot. I mean, imagine you watching a movie like Matrix or something like that. You're really involved in it, and you had power to enter the movie and help the guy. Okay? Help the guy kill a bad guy or whatever, that would ruin the movie. You know, it would make the movie uninteresting. So they're over there watching us, and we make sometimes a very interesting movie. And think of your life. There's parts of everybody's life here that would make an interesting movie if we knew all the details. Now, we don't know all the details going on in everybody's life, but old Larry Woods has some fun things happen to him that would be a good movie. Joseph over here, my son, I know he's probably entertaining people on the other side watching everything he's doing. But anyway, we are really interesting performers. And who was it that said, was it Shakespeare, that we're like actors in a play, and one man in his time performs many parts. But we are entertainers for these people in a great degree, and they don't want to help us out too much because that spoils the play. But by not helping us out and seeing what we do in different circumstances, makes a pretty interesting story, especially when they see that we are able to solve our problems. When I studied writing, they say that the basic plot for a successful story is this. First of all, you have the hero. He's introduced at the beginning, or the main character. Then you introduce, if you're going to write a good story, you got to introduce a major problem the lead character has. Okay, the lead character has a major problem, and then the problem gets worse and worse and worse and worse all throughout the story. And if you want to really keep the reader's attention, this is the way you got to write it. It keeps getting worse. And the hero fights and comes up with solution after solution, and it looks like maybe he's got it conquered, and then it gets a lot worse again. And then right near the end of the story, it gets so bad that it looks like our hero is doomed. Maybe he's chained up with and in a cage and has dynamite or nuclear bomb ready to explode in 3 minutes. And boy, you're watching and you think, there's no way he's going to get out of this. And then, to have a successful ending, here's what is required. And a lot of writers ignore this. But to create a successful ending for a story, the hero, by his own ingenuity, without a bunch of help from the outside, but by his own intelligence and genius, figures out how to solve the problem, and vamo, at the end, all the bad guys are vanquished, and the problem is solved. And the teaching, now this was back in the 60s when I studied this, so I don't know how well they don't always follow that now as good as they used to. But at the end, the hero solves the problem, we have a happy ending. And this is the most successful plot mechanism ever. So we are like in a play, in a way, and we are players in this great play, and there are people watching us from the other side. High entities, lower entities, masters, our higher self, they're not super involved with us. Some of us do go through boring places in our lives, and maybe some of us have boring lives, but overall, there's a lot of interesting things happening among humanity to catch attention. Thank you.